discriminate which one's more genuine or more basic? How do you decide?
Problem. The libidinous one is, I want to be thin. The ego one is, I want to be at peace. Now, I don't know how to describe the third one. But its attitude is, let the good times roll. You know, we're going to die tomorrow, so fuck it, eat everything in sight.
One more Cayenne philosophy.
Exactly. Exactly.
You've got the wine and the bread, you don't
have
the woman.
Well, I can live without the, pardon my French, anyhow. But this, really, the problem is that the one that wins is, let the good times roll. And the other two are like this. Seething with rage.
I'm curious, did that third one take over, or did a fourth one make the decision out of the other three?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
It's tied into this thing. Rose often talks about the decision maker. I don't know if that's meant as the umpire or something higher up, but the, whatever chooses between all the different ego heads.
Well, the best I've been able to track it down so far, the libidinous side started the argument. All of a sudden, I realized that for 53 years, I've been in anguish by being heavy because I don't like being heavy.
Well, you were all the time?
All my life, I've been heavy. Now, I never had a clear, strong shot at how important being thin is to me until this came up. I knew it was always something that I would like to have had, but I had no idea that it had this gut-level strength. And it's a real gut-ripper. But all of this really is an aside, because this is the thing that happened yesterday. I'm going along. This is about 3 o'clock in the morning, early this morning. And I'm right out on one of my rides, and it suddenly dawned on me that the reason I'm heavy is I can't take the pressure of being hungry. That came to my mind. And I thought to myself, pressure? What pressure? And I'm going along and I thought, Jesus Christ, it may be 6 months or 6 years before I find out what the pressure's all about. Well, I got lucky. 10 minutes later, it dawned on me that the pressure is, every time I'm hungry, I'm reminded of the fact of how violently insecure I am. And I could see with total clarity how insecure I am. And I haven't been able to see that for 30 years in my mind's eye, because my mind's eye is practically non-operative.
Everybody's hungry.
Well,
most people satisfy with something else.
Yeah, but I don't want to get lost. I'm tempted to wander there. I don't want to get to the point. So suddenly then it dawned on me, every goddamn time my stomach gets empty, I'm in an emotional crisis, and I can't stand the goddamn pressure. And the topmost mind that comes over me is, let the good times roll and get your face stuffed, because I stopped right then at the restaurant to find out. And I ate something, and the minute I ate, where the hell did you speak in? The minute I stopped, do you have any money with you?
Friends.
I'll give you some. You give me some back, if you have any. I paid a lot of bills, and I'm broke this early. The only time I have anything like serenity is immediately after I eat.
What is that serenity? Or are you just
it's as close as I can get. It's the net equivalent. It's the best I can do. So, by the time I got home, I was overwhelmed because no matter what you can say about being heavy or being thin, my mind was working. And I could sit there and see myself in three different heads. I could actually see it in my mind's eye. I don't get the chance to have my mind work 10 minutes a year. So I was overwhelmed with that, and now I'm in a holding pattern. I don't know what in the hell will come next, but the whole thing came out of nowhere. Uninvited, unannounced, and all the rest. And I just know that the goddamn thing is leading to something that has absolutely nothing to do with the weight. In other words, here's what I discovered going down through all the sickness I had in my genes and all the rest of it. When I have my mind operating in the fashion, now most people's minds operate this way, it never stopped operating this way. So they don't know what I'm talking about when I say it. They don't realize that their mind operates this way. You have to have had it work and stop working to be able to see the difference. But when my mind is working, I watch my mind work. And the biggest pleasure in this world to me is to watch my mind work, no matter what it's doing, whether I'm thinking, whether I'm working on something with my hands, whether no matter what it is. But to watch it working, that's to be myself. That's what I consider being myself. And when I watch myself work, insecurity evaporates because I am capable. I can see that my mind is working. It can come to grips with things. It can resolve issues. I can figure things out. I can get things done. And when I'm in that state, I'm secure. This is a modification of the Freudian idea. For me, that is security, and I used to have it and not have it on a regular basis, so that it was very vivid and very real for me. Now the problem is, so long as I don't have my mind working, I am violently insecure. If I had all the money in the world, I would still be terribly insecure. So long as I'm insecure, I don't have a shining chance of doing anything about my weight.
One interpretation would be that this option that came your way of losing weight and all that could have been an invitation to get to a higher level of mental functioning, and by fighting against it or by giving in to the weakness, you might just be procrastinating.
No, you can't do anything about it, John. It's the same thing as saying you're going to decide to not drink water.
Well, it sounds similar when you tried to get off the dope last year, and for a while you were free, and then it just didn't work to get back again.
Well, that's a different type of a situation. That drug was killing me. This one I'm on now works fine.
I mean, in terms of having something that numbs the discomfort enough to let you function.
No, it isn't a matter of numbing the discomfort.
Yeah.
It's a matter of eliminating. It corrects the mind function.
What is it that made the mistake to begin with, or perpetuates it, the overweight in this case? There's something.
Just the
right
fact
there.
Of the way my mother raised me.
Okay, well, I'm suggesting that maybe there's a way to somehow get beyond that.
Oh, yeah, sure. All you have to do is get over schizophrenia. That's all you have to do. And like I said, I have yet to hear of one. But I have a suspicion, as I said, that there's something very basic going on here, and a lot is yet to be said about it. I gave up on it completely yesterday afternoon. I was in a terrible despair. But then I began to get suspicious. I don't feel that way about it now.
Yeah, well, schizophrenia is incurable. Why would this new option come your way then?
That's the whole point. We'll just have to wait and see.
Tune in next week.
Yeah, right.
I was over at Elby's down in Brownsville. And there are these people, next to them, you'd be considered skinny.
I know.
About six of them at this table, and they were chowing down. And
really feel sorry for people.
Plus desserts, okay. So I was at the cash register when they came up, and the woman just kind of leans on the against the counter of the register. I mean, this was like 600 or 500 pounds. And she said a sentence there that summed up everything. She says, you know, they're groaning from how much food they ate. She says, I don't know which is worse, to be too full or to be too hungry. And just the way you said that, it was, or just the way she said that, it was like, this is something she struggled with about six times a day.
Sounds like it's procrastinating something, though. Just don't, I'll deal with the problem tomorrow.
Well, John, see, the nonsense that you can't deal with the problem at all is the problem. When I get hungry, I'm so goddamn upset I'm ready to jump out a window. Now, in other words, if I really steel myself, I can stand being hungry for about 6 hours, but that's it.
It's this thing of discrimination, though, the true needs versus the false ones. You know, the junkie needs the junk real bad.
Yeah, but John, you're talking about somebody who has some access to themselves, and a person that's in the condition I'm in just doesn't have that.
Have you ever checked yourself for hypoglycemia?
Yes, they do. Christ, they show, yes. They, oh boy.
There's certain times when I get hungry, and it's just a certain irritable type of hunger that would affect me like you're saying, but it's very rare that I get that. But I think it is associated with low blood sugar.
Well, the truth of the matter is I never get ordinarily hungry. I haven't been ordinarily hungry in 30 years. Instead of getting hungry, I get into an emotional crisis. I don't eat because I'm hungry. My stomach gets empty, and I get panicky.
Most people in society probably never experienced hunger unless they were lost in the woods for 2 years.
Right, right.
When I counter you sometimes, it's not to disagree, but to point out that Jim Burns has a certain mind and there might be other possibilities for the rest of us. That's like, I think sometimes we forget that.
Boy, I tell you, I have one of the nicer garbage cans in town. I wouldn't call it a mine. All painted and pretty on the outside, but full of maggots inside.
Yeah, I think that's very common. It's just not universally recognized.
You know, in one sense, it could also be that nearly everybody may have a certain psychological orientation towards hunger.
They do.
Food.
Almost everybody does.
Well, and yours right. is just taking a certain bent, you know, or bent, particular bent. And probably most people aren't aware of it.
No, they pay no attention to it at all.
Yeah.
They go ahead and so much so that you try to get a discussion going on. They don't know what you're saying.
I don't know
where you are or what you're talking about or anything else.
I think a recent survey said that half this country is overweight.
Just got through reading that.
That's a whole lot of
statistics. You know, like just to take as a kind of a crude example, some people take food as like a gourmet type of thing where they really get sensual pleasure from the act of eating.
Yeah.
And other people, it's fuel, just like you can put gas in your tank.
Yeah, I have a friend that I work with down at the cycle shop. He he's not too tall. He's probably about 5'6" or something like that. And I think if he weighed 100 pounds, it was the high point of his life. Yeah. You watch him eat, he detests having to be bothered with it. He detests food.
That might be sickness too in reverse.
Yeah, it's just it's the same thing on going the other way.
Yeah, I've experienced that too. I think that's what happens. I've experienced that for a few days at a time, and I was kind of aware that that's what might happen to somebody that's anorexic, is they might slide
that's
into
right.
Because after you don't eat for a while, you don't have the problem.
No, the hunger dies out. The last time I lost weight, when I was able to do something about it before I lost my mind completely, I just tried the idea of just forgetting to eat for about 3 or 4 days because, give me that pen for a second. Okay. Something told me. I had never done it before, and I'm not one to go read something or ask somebody. I'll try it and find out for myself. But after about 3 days, there was no hunger. all I did was eat a little cottage cheese, eat a hamburger occasionally, and load up on vitamins. And in 3 months' time, I lost 60 pounds. And I had no problem. There was no problem at all. I was never hungry. I was never upset. No, never nothing. It was a no-sweat deal. And I was hoping that that would be the situation this time. But I know now that this thing is another phase of the business that started in my deep sleep last summer that I was talking about last week. It definitely is a continuation of some process, and I don't have the vaguest notion. Of what the hell it's trying to get done. I was really in a hell of a state yesterday afternoon when the roof fell in on me. I just keep getting on the scale. I've gotten the advantage of not putting any more weight on, but I lost about 6 pounds and it stayed there. I haven't been able to do, and I know why, because I just a simple case of, the real problem with me is 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. My mother's insulted if I don't eat dinner. And if I don't eat 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, I'm not going to go to sleep. And that's the problem.
You said it was a Freudian process. What's Freud say about that?
Well, I'm just an oral type, that's all. Oral fixation. Listen, I don't want to go into the details. I could tell you just exactly what it is. Believe me, it's nothing more than breastfeeding. I mean, well, take my word for it personally. I know that to be the case where I'm concerned. But the thing about it is the whole process, including the visual imagery that's involved in realizing the details of the emotional distress and the pattern of relief that I probably formed by the time I was 6 weeks old, all of that imagery is real and living to me now, and I haven't had imagery in my mind for 30 years. So something is really up. We will just have to wait and see what the hell comes. It would be a lot simpler if I hope they get that house sold before I weigh 400 pounds. If I'm around here, I don't have the problem because I am loath to do any cooking.
The food they cook here is edible, so you're not going
to gain. Yeah.
So it's just a matter of incurable sickness. It's circumstances.
Circumstances are into it heavily. I get up in the morning.
You have to manipulate those factors you can.
It's the problem. I can't manipulate. If she cooks something, her heart and soul is in it. And so you just don't. She gets so goddamn upset if you leave anything on the plate. Well, it's leaving.
Buy smaller plates. Maybe she won't notice.
Yeah.
Once you buy a dog, you just keep slipping it off the table.
Yeah. But that is the major contributing factor to why I've put on weight since I went back to Woodville Street. Because when it's up to me, I don't eat until 11 o'clock. Then I only eat once. And the problem tends to correct itself. But since I get there, there's two meals a day cooked for me, plus the fact that I have to have something to eat when I go to bed. Well,
What do you think the most common cause of overeating is?
There is only one cause, the oral type, emotional insecurity.
Does anybody else have insights on it? I mean, probably everybody's wrestled with it or tried fasting or has some habit, smoking or whatever, to try to overcome.
I'm secure.
Yeah.
You've got no
problem. See, there's a big difference, I'll tell you, between trying to quit smoking and trying to quit eating. Because you got two voices when you don't eat. You got a voice that says, if you don't eat, you'll die, which is true. But when you try to quit smoking, you'll get the same kind of voice that says, if you don't have a cigarette, you'll die. And it's amazing. That's what I got. Real clear. And I was amazed because I knew that I would probably die if I kept smoking. But to hear that voice say, if I don't have a cigarette, I'm going to die, it really opened my head up to this type of voices that you hear.
How'd you manage to quit?
Well, I just was told that I have generally, I'm in danger of having poor circulation, and if I continue to smoke for a few years, I'd probably end up chopping my feet off or something, so I quit in about a week.
Sometimes the umpire doesn't argue at all.
Huh? No argument at all.
Big facts like that.
Oh, Christ. You know, I want to talk about it some, but I don't want to talk about it too much, because those other two, I get so upset that...
One thing that's always suggested in psychology, and I stick with all that in here, is it's hard to get rid of something unless you put something else in that's better.
Place.
You know, if you just say
for
if
me,
you negate, it's kind of hard.
You can't do that. For me, I can't do it
worked,
at all.
I quit smoking like that once. Every time I wanted a cigarette, I'd smoke a joint. Worked.
Where's every time? Yeah. No, I mean, say with the food thing, if you can substitute something else that... That helps. I don't know. I'm not sure what would.
We'll get you on a pacifier or
something. One thing I pick up from what Jim is saying is that anytime you want to bring about a change in your life, you have to kind of understand the cause and effect relationship. What's going on? What you're exactly trying to do, and what the cause of the real problem is, and just the wholesale starting or stopping or beginning a new phase of your life is not really going to solve all your problems. You know what I mean? It takes more than just all of a sudden let's just reduce or gain weight or whatever the problem.
If you found a girlfriend was an aerobics teacher, you'd lose weight.
If I found a girlfriend that weighed as much as I did, I'd be dying and going to heaven.
I'll introduce you to my mother.
Yeah.
Working on that again, huh?
She doesn't know what she's doing. Boy, somebody tries to live with me for 5 minutes. It's like inviting a maddened lion into the den.
One thing behaviors sometimes say is often the symptom is the problem, which literally might
That's
be
right.
false, but in a functional sense of curing something, if you can break the habit pattern in a roundabout way, you might cure the underlying thing later. You know, sometimes trying to figure out all the psychic reasons and what went wrong when you were 2 years old, you might waste 5 years instead of just quitting smoking and fight on a bullet for a month.
Yeah.
You know.
Jim, what do you think about it?
What he just said is correct, from my perspective.
Do you try to quit smoking?
Oh, sure. I start to stop. I've been overweight before, and I just cut down. I just stopped eating.
All right. How much was it?
Psychological battle. Which did you have to go through?
It's just willpower. You do it or you don't.
Well, so that's
which point you identify with.
Well, that's the point. I don't
you
know.
You have three different willpowers.
That's yeah, but that's true. But I don't know whether he has enough experience with schizophrenia to realize how livid it is. There was a time when I lived strictly by willpower and didn't think a thing of it. It took a long time to get that way, and it worked just fine until the whole thing just evaporated. And I don't have the faintest trace of willpower for 30 years. Nothing that even remotely resembles it. But the point that keeps coming back to my mind is, out of nowhere comes this circumstance. It starts with a little thing. It builds and builds. Finally, it's got 24 hours a day to itself. And this little shot and that little shot and the other little shot come to mind about it and what's involved here. And in the overall, the thing that has meant the most to me is it's only been in bits and spurts here and there, but my mind has actually been working here and there for a few seconds at a time, which it has been doing now with some regularity for almost a year, and it didn't do that at all for 30 years. So something is up. Something that may be a long time brewing.
So maybe it isn't incurable.
Well, John, if it's curable in me eventually, I will still be the exception that proved the rule, because the average person who gets sick doesn't even have the strength to be able to confront the fact that they're crazy. The worst crisis I ever had in my life in consciousness was dealing with the realization that I was insane. But something told me that if I can confront it and cope with it and live with it until I can learn something about it and handle it, there's some hope. If I go the other way and deny that there's anything wrong with me, which I couldn't tell you, it was one of the strongest acts of will that I ever had in my life. My brothers and sisters have never confronted the fact that they're crazy. That's what's wrong with them. And that's what's wrong with the majority of mental patients. They get sick, they're too weak, they can't fight it, they can't deal with the fact, they know it, and they run away from it, and that's the end. You never get a chance to come back.
Do they ever look to you as a role model or something?
Hmm?
Do they ever look at you as somebody who's struggling or, you know, working at it?
Do they?
Yeah.
They can't figure me out at all. They think I'm some kind of Houdini. And they've told me so.
Your brother doesn't think he's sick then, huh?
My brother, you know, he... You
never
hear,
occurs to him?
Huh?
Never occurs to him?
Oh, I know the process. It tries to occur to him, but he can't cope with it, so he makes another U-turn.
Does he acknowledge he stays in maybe?
Huh?
Does he acknowledge he stays in maybe?
He can, you know, you don't dare ask him what he's doing in Mayview, but they ask him on a regular basis, and they tell me you can't believe the stories he comes up with.
Oh, but they keep probing him just to try to bring the realization that they are sick.
That's just about the only thing they ever do in that hospital. I don't know whether it's peculiar to that one or not. You know, the first time, you ought to see the routine. I mean, the first time they ever came around to me with a question, Mr. Burns, what the fuck do you think I'm doing here, you asshole? They never asked me again. But they never got that response from anybody else, ever.
Oh, so that's half the game, just somebody admitting that they're...
Having the strength to handle it.
Oh, that's the first step of AA, or in this group, admitting that you've got a problem and it's out of control.
This group?
Well, yeah, I am ignorant and that's not good enough for me.
Smoking, thinking.
That's right.
Yes, will.
I am a robot.
That
robot. I'm not satisfied. That was the original name.
Yeah. Jim, you follow the idea of archetypes very much in psychology. We were talking about the use of tarot cards and that kind of thing, too.
There is, but now you're getting into something that I can't remember. But the minute you bring the question up, I have played with tarot, I Ching, or however you say it, was always I Ching, and the Ouija board, and automatic writing, extensively, some numerology, some handwriting analysis, with no interest in anything but myself. I was never interested in anyone else when I was playing with these things. They were all avenues to discovering my unconscious mind. And dreams.
Yes.
Dreams was by far the most important. And in the higher reaches of abstraction in consciousness, in the ordinary mind, in the conscious mind, not the unconscious mind, not the superconscious mind, there is a propensity and a capacity to be aware in extremes of concentration if you happen to be strongly enough motivated to do so at a particular moment from the pressures of your life, not someone else's. To get into what the ordinary mind generally considers to be chance. And I used to regularly be able to achieve a height of concentration and awareness in this area that would be permit me to be conscious with perfect clarity of exactly what the potentials were in a present situation that I was in. And I would be able to see without failure and without fault exactly what necessarily had to lead from what had already been to what factors would have to come out of that intrinsically by the nature of what was involved. And in that sense, I could see the future for a distance of as much as 6 months in my life, in the development of my inner life, faultlessly. And from that, I could determine exactly what I should do, where to put the effort, where to put the emphasis, and it was an unfailing guide. What we call chance doesn't in reality exist, but we have no other way of coping with it. And the I Ching particularly, if you learn to decipher the hexagrams, will put you on to what's unfolding for you every time. But if the motivation isn't there, you won't be able to see the patterns, and you won't be able to see the point in it at all. It'll be meaningless.
You gotta have the concentration then.
You have to have the cause. You have to really be under pressure or it won't work.
You always did it for yourself then?
Yes. Absolutely. You will not play with anybody else in that kind of stuff.
We'll do that.
Gets them involved in my workup, and I don't want anything in my workup but me.
Okay, now these, I'm familiar with the hexagrams. I've read some of them, but I never memorized any or worked with it. But do these correspond to, in an abstract sort of way, to archetypes?
They are, to me, as I see them translated from the Chinese, dream symbolism used almost exclusively. That's how I interpret the hexagrams. When they talk about mountains, when they talk about lakes, when they talk about the warrior, when they talk about, oh hell, I've forgotten, I can't remember all the different things that they mention. It's a matter of seeing yourself in a dream trying to resolve a distress and putting yourself in the position of doing the things that they're talking about, acting out the symbols, and understand what emotions come to your mind, what feelings come to mind when you put yourself in that circumstance and imagine yourself to be working out that kind of a situation, whether it's visual, physical, emotional, or whatever it is. Whatever emotions come to mind are the things that are going to lead you to an awareness of the unfolding that is coming about within yourself in that area at that time.
Okay, now when they give a hexagram, they give the symbol, and they've got a paragraph, and somebody else has usually added a paragraph of interpretation.
Right.
Just avoid that, or
I read all of it.
Okay.
And see it as a dream. As a dream process.
So what if you don't know anything about dream processes? Then what do?
You better start studying. Dreams are where it's at.
Okay, are you... I've read what Carl Jung talks about with dreams a lot. Is this in basically line with your...
There's three people that I consider to have brilliant insights into dreams. Chasey, Jung, and Freud.
First step to getting into dreams, you could interpret your life. I mean, whether this is a dream or not in a cosmic sense, it's a separate point, but I think you can just see patterns and symbols and archetypes in your life. You don't have to analyze another dimension.
You may find that dreams are the greater or more real reality than what we call reality. Which you get into.
You may be dealing with hidden stuff that you don't see the rest
of
the
time. To the inner self, they're more real.
To
the part of you that's always hungry, they're the realest thing there is.
It's hard to explain. Just the college. That's what he was talking about.
Well, really, the part of you that's always hungry, the part of you that brings you here, wants to understand only one thing, that part of you. And that part of you has a field day 8 hours a night. So if you're passing that by, you're passing by the main road.
Does that stuff, does the unconscious process that stuff anyway, whether you're aware of it or not?
Yep.
What's
and
the
if it doesn't succeed, it keeps repeating.
Well, what's the advantage to making the thing conscious? Or,
you start getting linear motion instead of going over the thing over and over and over and over.
So it won't resolve it just by itself?
No. Absolutely will not until it is brought into consciousness and changes your personality. It hasn't gotten done what it's trying to do.
So would it be correct in thinking that you usually get the same message all the time through your dreams until some progress is made?
In the late evening dreams, assuming that you haven't been overwhelmed with shit at work in the family or something like that, if you're getting down into the down and dirty at night, you're just repeating until you get to the point.
You have a sudden image that comes through that you've never had before. It's really outstanding. It's either some phenomenon in from outside
you're
or
getting
some
lucky.
Breakthrough.
That's right. You're getting lucky.
But also it might be something from outside that has nothing to do with me.
Sure, you ran into something that made something apparent to you that you couldn't see before. That's one of the best days you can have.
Here's what I brought up. Because last night I dreamt I looked in the mirror and saw the devil.
Well, when you get up in the morning and shave the devil? I shaved the devil for about 7 years. I'm serious.
I love that one.
I'm telling you the truth. I was in such a living rage at having to get out of bed.
Virgin Mary? Looks like a bird.
And ultimately, it turned out to be me. But a totally unknown me. And I would have the suspicion that it was that type of thing. Part of himself that he was never able to find any other means of bringing to the surface at all.
Does anybody want to get into that question I brought up a while ago? Maybe that's worth looking into. I'll repeat it again since people came. And Jim, one of Jim's main themes has been that in this business of answering your own questions and stuff like that, the real answer isn't an answer, but it's resolving the problem at the source, wherever generated the question. You just sort of
where did it come from? Always.
Yeah, right. So like the question occurred to me, it's like, what was the very first question that, when you started thinking, your first philosophical question or doubt or... You know, the first time you had an inkling or a mind door open, you were more than just, you know, automatic me. And then what was the question would be the first thing, and then do you remember what generated it, or was there an incident or a life circumstance or something that made you what, you know, that you're sitting in this room now?
about 25 micrograms or something.
For a lot of people it is. I'm assuming though for a lot of us it might have been even when you were 10 or 8 or very early. I mean, you were reading Kant in elementary school, but that maybe you had an inkling of something that most kids didn't, or you know, just something came up. Maybe you saw, you went to a planetarium show and you looked at the sky and all of a sudden you wonder, I wonder if God's up there or something. I don't know. Or somebody died and you wonder what that is, you know?
I'll tell you what happened. We were in the junior choir at church. And all the kids were always screwing around this cosmic commotion. And my older brother was under the opinion that there's definitely no such thing as God. And that was the, and everybody around us was totally, I mean, it was totally obvious that they were all bumbling adults and they didn't know what they were doing. And to a kid, it's very clear. The adults don't think so. But the consensus of all the kids in the choir, or at least the you know, troublesome ones, was there is no God, so screw around, have a good time, this is just a joke, okay? And then one day I thought, but what if there is? Snappy, complete change from that moment on.
How old were you?
10, 11, 10. 12, something like that.
You felt guilty?
No, I just felt, hey, I better be prepared, I better, you know, I mean, maybe this all isn't
that
bullshit.
Like guilt.
No, it wasn't guilt at all.
Was it,
I was saying,
that God might kick your ass if you party too?
No, it was like saying, you know, hey, the bus is coming in 5 minutes. I better be, better have my baggage packed. It was like that.
Well, what would have been the difference between?
No, it was a real strong feeling.
What would have been the difference between believing in God and the kids who didn't? What's the actual difference?
No, I didn't even say I believed. I just said, but what if?
Okay, well, between the two.
See, I had to be prepared for that possibility.